dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and your guide for another installment of the War of Ideas waged by some of the best in the business. We have a second installment of our week's conversation with Pete Hoekstra, the outgoing ranking member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, formerly its chairman, a man with great breadth of understanding and considerable influence as well as acumen when it comes to matters of national security, not just intelligence, but the national security broadly defined. And we look forward to talking with him a bit about the New START treaty, the whole idea that we're resetting the relationship with Russia and that the Senate must agree to the ratification of this treaty in the lame duck session or, oh, heavens, Armageddon will break loose. We'll be talking with Pete about that. Secondly, we'll be talking with a remarkable man, I had the privilege to meet at the David Horowitz Freedom Center's Restoration Weekend. His name is Christian Adams. He was, a whistleblower, I guess is the technical term for it, a man who would not countenance what the Obama administration was trying to do to turn a blind eye to new Black Panther Party members engaged in voting intimidation and manipulation. Then third segment, we'll be talking with Pat Caddell, one of the most brilliant political observers, strategists, pollsters, who has some very interesting insights into what it meant for the Republican cause in this election that they failed to have a narrative, have a strategy, have an articulate program on national security. And finally, Peter Pham will be telling us about what's coming in Sudan and what it might mean for all of us if it goes bad. So, but first up, we've got at the top of that very impressive lineup, Congressman Pete Hoekstra. Welcome back, sir. We had a chance to talk with you on Wednesday, and we're coming back to visit a little bit further, and I appreciate very much you're making yourself available for that purpose.
Oh, no, it's good to be with you. Thank you.
Let's talk about New START. This is the treaty that was signed in April by President Obama with his Russian counterpart. It makes deep reductions in our nuclear forces. I know that this is not something that you have been directly responsible for on the House side. It's the Senate that is responsible under our Constitution for the advice and consent to treaties. But you've had a chance, I'm sure, to take a look at it. You certainly know that you're Senate counterpart, Senator Kit Bond, has said he believes this treaty to be unverifiable. What do you think of it? And specifically, is it advisable in your judgment for the Senate to be trying to jam this thing through in its lame duck session?
Well, we've looked at it, and I agree with my counterpart over on the Senate side. I think it's going to be next to impossible to verify the terms and conditions of this treaty. The second part of your question, I think, is the more troubling one, which is, you know, and this has been the strategy of this administration. Hurry up. We got to get it done. It's urgent. Yep. It's got to get done now.
Urgency.
And, you know, the president did that with the almost $1 trillion stimulus package. We got to get it done. We got, you know, get the economy moving. We would have been a whole lot better off taking a little bit more time, and we might have actually spent $1 trillion and had an impact. We now know that we spent $1 trillion and it didn't do anything for the economy.
Yeah. Same with healthcare, right?
And then he did the same thing with, we have to pass it now. We've got to pass it before we, you know, according to Nancy Pelosi, you know, we'll read the bill after we pass it.
Right. We'll find out what it says.
And, you know, and now he wants to do this with national security. And it's like, no, Mr. President, it's wrong. This, you can't pass this in, well, he may be able to pass it in lame duck, but it is wrong. It is wrong to pass it through a lame duck session. I mean, take a look at what the president wants to do. He wants to do immigration. He wants to do the, he wants to do immigration. He now wants to do START. He's got to do a spending bill. We've got to deal with the Bush tax cuts.
The DREAM Act is in the mix, I think. It just goes on and on. Congressman Hoekstra, just as a long time and very highly regarded legislator, let me just ask you this specific question. Recognizing again that you are in what they call the lower house, but the role that was given to the Senate by the framers, to deliberate and to be directly involved in the treaty making process, and especially to be responsible for advising and consenting on the two-thirds vote basis, clearly a very high bar. It just seems as though this is all being stood on its ear. And while you're right, the president has been engaged in this kind of Alinskyite, jam them up strategy in other areas, this would seem to be in a class by itself in terms of the implications for the country, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. Because number one, he's making it political. I think in the last few weeks, he's been saying, Republicans better not stand in the way of this, and it's damaging for national security. He hasn't been talking about this. He hasn't been talking about this recently. All of a sudden, it comes up with a sense of urgency. Other people have put it in the context of, now that we've learned these new things about North Korea, it points out we've got to do the START treaty now so that the Russians, will cooperate with us in reigning in North Korea. And it's kind of like, well, I don't know if they'll cooperate. They haven't for the last 6, 8, 10, 12 years cooperated with us. This whole reset that he's been talking about with Russia, it appears that we and President Obama may be willing to reset, but there's really been very few indications that the Russians are willing to reset. It wasn't all that long ago that we just, detected and arrested all of these spies here in the United States. And now he wants to throw the process out, political expediency to get a win before the end of the year on national security. The framers put in place a process of a supermajority approving treaties with the assumption that to get to two-thirds, you're going to have detailed deliberations, debates about what's good, what's bad, and whether overall a treaty is worthwhile passing. It was never intended to be these things were never intended to be political, short-term, expedient votes. The Senate take the time and exercise the constitutional responsibility that was given to it, not to be a rubber stamp to the president, but to be a check on the president.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Very well said, sir. Congressman, we've got about 2 minutes left. Let me just conclude with a related subject. As you know, missile defense is one of the things that we're quite concerned might be encumbered by this new START treaty. Knowing what you know about the threats emerging around the world, and particularly those that are coming from very dangerous countries who have acquired or are in the process of acquiring ever more capable ballistic missiles with which to deliver all manner of very dangerous front ends. How important, in your estimation, Congressman Pete Hoekstra of Michigan, is the ability of the United States to field the most capable defenses against such missile threats, and what should we be doing to ensure that that option is fully preserved?
Well, what we need to do is we need to be looking realistically at the situation that is out there. We don't have all the intelligence that what we'd like to have, but we do know that there are rogue states like Iran and North Korea that probably have capabilities beyond what our intelligence community has discovered. We've seen that very recently again with North Korea, where you find this installation that has up to 2,000 centrifuges. We should be expecting that both North Korea and Iran have probably moved their missile programs beyond where we think they may be and beyond what we have firm intelligence pointing to, which says, let's make sure that we develop our missile shield and we continue moving forward, because I don't want to be surprised someday when either North Korea, Iran, or someone else shoots off a missile a whole lot further, a whole lot more accurate, with a lot more payload capacity than what we ever expected because we didn't know it. And then we find out that we just, you know, we don't have a missile shield in place. And all of a sudden, we're a whole lot more vulnerable than what we wanted.
Yeah, very scary prospect. Congressman Pete Hoekstra, as always, thank you so much for your leadership on these matters, for your insights, and for sharing them with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. We hope to have you back, on a regular basis going forward, but particularly before you leave office. And thank you in the meantime for your tremendous service to our country. And Godspeed. Keep
it
up.
Hey, great. Thank you.
Next up, Christian Adams is going to shed light on what the Obama Holder Justice Department is doing in the way of miscarriages of justice when it comes to your voting rights. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Christian Adams, a man I am very pleased to say I had the chance to make the acquaintance of at the David Horowitz Freedom Center Restoration Weekend, which he addressed after receiving an award for his courage I guess a whistleblower is one rather hackneyed way of describing it. I think it is an exemplar of public service. Christian Adams was a career attorney in the Department of Justice, responsible for a part of the work that that department does that I think is frankly extraordinarily important to the functioning of our government, namely the election laws and their enforcement, the voting rights and practices and so on. And Christian Adams has come to some celebrity, some would say notoriety, but I think of it as celebrity, as a result of his decision to object publicly and to resign from the Department of Justice in order to do so. to the practice that the Obama administration engaged in with respect to a clear violation of the Voting Rights Acts with respect to voter intimidation in the course of the 2008 election in Philadelphia, perpetrated by members of the New Black Panther Party. So, Christian Adams, thank you so much for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio, and thank you for, you know, really, as I say, this exemplary commitment to the integrity of our laws and the process. And I'd like to ask you a little bit about the particulars of this episode, and then maybe segue into a broader discussion of why this is important to not just, you know, an election here or there, but to the very foundation and practice of our government.
Great to be here. On November 2008, during the presidential election in Philadelphia, armed members of the New Black Panther Party, which is a militant anti-American, anti-Semitic organization, were stationed outside of a polling place in Philadelphia wearing their uniforms and weapons. And
what kind of weapons?
Well, they had a billy club. Both of them were felons, people who have assaulted individuals in the past. And they were standing outside the polls shouting racial slurs at white individuals, preventing people from entering the polls. And
physically blocking the way, or simply threatening people if they were to think about going in?
They attempted to physically block the way from a sworn witness named Chris Hill, who submitted a sworn declaration as well as testified in front of the Civil Rights Commission to this effect. They tried to stop him from entering, and it was just a general menace. And why this is important is, in our country, if there's anywhere in the world and any place in history, the place where you don't expect to see armed men in fascist-style uniforms in front of a voting booth is the United States of America. This is not something that we tolerate, but unfortunately, the Holder Justice Department did, when they dropped the case in May of 2009.
Now, before we get to what the Holder regime did at the Justice Department, let's talk a little bit about how the case was proceeding up to that point. You, as one of the career professionals, I want to emphasize this is not a political or partisan position you held. You were there for some years, as I understand it, working in this particular division of the Justice Department. What was the status of the case before the senior levels of the political appointees in the Justice Department intervened?
The case was filed before the inauguration, during the Bush administration. The Black Panthers never responded. And when you are sued in a lawsuit, you respond. You file an answer. You do various things. But the spring dragged on with actually literally the attorneys at the department who brought the case, myself included, talking with the lawyers for the Black Panthers. They had counsel, and they refused to answer the complaint. So the case went to default, meaning they didn't do anything, and the court entered default against them in April of 2009. And the final step was to ask the court for a particular type of injunction or some sort of remedy or punishment against all four defendants. And on May 15th, the Justice Department filed a document that completely dismissed the case against three of the defendants and put in a slap-on-the-wrist remedy against the last defendant, where he just can't have a weapon in the city of Philadelphia on Election Day at the polls. Totally different from what was asked for in the complaint. Totally released three of the defendants. And as I've testified to the Civil Rights Commission, totally driven by a hostility toward race-neutral enforcement of the civil rights laws.
Let's refine that a little bit. Race-neutral enforcement means that no matter who has their rights infringed upon, it is the Justice Department's obligation to defend those rights. In this case, you had black individuals, African-American individuals, members of this new Black Party, Black Panther Party, rather, and they were essentially given a pass from an egregious, blatant, documented violation of these acts of these laws. If it had not been for that direction coming from the senior members of the Justice Department, the political appointees under Barack Obama in the Justice Department, how would this case have been resolved?
Well, in the Justice Department, when a defendant doesn't answer, you get the full measure of relief. You go to court, you walk into court, and you always get a full injunction against everybody who was sued. But that's not what happened. They ordered the case dismissed against three of the four defendants entirely.
For example, had it gone through the normal process, what would have likely been the penalties meted out to these three individuals?
Well, for the answer to that, all you need to do is look at the actual complaint that was filed and what the Justice Department asked for when the case was filed. They asked for a nationwide injunction against the new Black Panther Party and their leadership from implementing another armed Election Day polling place operation. The reason that the injunction was sought nationwide is because the new Black Panthers announced that the operation was nationwide. The reason that they asked for an injunction against weapons is because weapons were used. So neither of those two...
Used not in the sense of physically beating somebody with a nightstick, but threatening.
Correct.
To use them in that fashion.
They were brandished, which is a term of art, meaning you do more than just possess.
Okay.
So the complaint asked for a nationwide injunction against all four defendants from breaking the law in future elections. What the Justice Department sought and got was a very narrow injunction that expires in 2012 against one defendant just in the city of Philadelphia. And this is important because the federal court had jurisdiction over the entire Eastern District of Pennsylvania. Easton, Allentown, Reading, Bucks County, Montgomery County. But the Justice Department ordered that the case be narrowed to only the city of Philadelphia, a completely inexplicable instruction.
Yeah, and just to wrap this up, Christian Adams, a former federal prosecutor in the Justice Department, when this case was dismissed, effectively, what was the message, as best you can tell, taken away from it by this particular group, the New Black Panthers, but presumably others who might have similar designs on influencing and affecting our elections and therefore affecting the kind of government we have, the quality of representation in that government?
I don't need to speculate about that. You only need to look at what happened in Houston on November 2nd, 2010. And the Houston chapter of the New Black Panther Party, run by a man named Quanell X, took six or seven members of the Black Panthers, entered polling places, entered polling places illegally where they did not have the right to be, and they ordered and instructed the election judges, the officials, to eject white poll watchers who were watching the election. They ordered people ejected who were election officials who were white, and this happened all across Houston, and there are witness statements on the web of the victims who will tell you more about it.
So we will find out, I suspect, that this kind of behavior has rewarded, reinforced the kind of violations of the Voting Rights Act and other electoral laws in this country. Christian Adams, I join the David Horowitz Freedom Center in thanking you for your service to our country and that you're providing now by holding those in government accountable.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
Next up, Pat Caddell, pollster preeminent on the effect of a lack of national security focus on the elections of 2010. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks. Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We have a very special guest, Pat Cadell. He is, by my lights at least, the single most astute political observer of our time. He was a national preeminent figure during the Carter administration when he served as the president's pollster. But in the years that have followed, he has stayed very much in the public eye, notably with Fox News, where he is a regular guest and contributor, and a man who I think many of us turn to for counsel and insights into what is happening in the American body politic. Pat, it is a great privilege to have you with us. You're here at the David Horowitz Freedom Center's Restoration Weekend. You've addressed the crowd, and you've come up with an insight which I think is of particular note and importance to those of us, and I'd like to think that this is true of the Secure Freedom Radio audience most especially, but all of us who care about the security of the United States. I just invite you to share with us what
you took away from your post-mortem of this recent election?
Well, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, election morning. We were at the decision team at Fox, and I was going through some of the later stages of the exit poll questioning. And it was a stunning number. There was a question added at the last minute. And we finally got an exit poll that at least was relatively reasonable after this first time in a decade. But anyway, we had one. And it asked people about the terrorist event that took place on the Friday before the election with the airplanes and the attempt to bring the cartridges and the bombs or whatever.
The printer cartridges.
The printer cartridges supposed to explode,
we understand, over the United States.
Right. People were asked, who just voted, how important an issue it was, if it was an issue at all, in their decision how to vote that day. 9%, one out of every 10 voters, said it was the single most important reason for how they voted, and they voted 55-43 Democratic.
Wow.
And they did it because, it goes to my point, when I saw the number, I was stunned. First of all, given this election, given this is a one-day event, it's what I call the October surprise. Mm. There was an October surprise, and this was it. And anyone who was, just to add more to that point, for anyone who doesn't understand that the White House knew about this at 10 o'clock the night before, leaked it out, let it develop in a huge story, did not speak to the country till 4 o'clock the next half on Friday afternoon, saying we have it in control. There's a reason that Tom Donilon, who I know quite well from the Carter and then Mondale and other years, who I'm not sure he has any qualifications for being National Security Advisor, was a major political player, that this happened. Well, what happened was, as soon as I saw that number, the 12-point Democratic advantage, because a lot of people would have thought instantly that event I thought it was a wash. Some people thought it would hurt the Democrats because of the terrorist thing. No, it helped because, as every terrorist event has done, rally around the flag becomes the issue for voters.
So even though many Americans have rightly developed a certain skepticism about Barack Obama's national security performance and leadership, you're saying that because he's president of the United States, the line that Tom Donilon and others pushed out was, we've taken care of the
problem. I don't think it was that they had done it that way. It was, the country's under threat. What do? You rally around the president. That's the central figure of this. And because there's no narrative, here's my larger point. Because there's no national security narrative in this country, you know, and I hope we talk with some about the mosque and some of the other issues, because these things, the media, are single events, they don't cover them, they're watered down. What we've not done with the American people is established a narrative which connects the dots going on here. If that had created, people's reaction would have been, I think, quite different. They would have said, this fits into a pattern. Mm-hmm. They would have instantly got it. The failure to have a narrative on national security cost, let me tell you what the result in the election is. That alone shifted the election results 2.5 points. If given this margin, it was late. It's a 2-point shift for the Democrats. That cost the Republicans as many as 15 House seats. Wow. and at least 2 Senate seats.
Wow. So we're seeing, in your analysis, Pat Caddell, one of the preeminent political observers and analysts of our time, you're seeing what was an extraordinary evening, I think, by most accounts for Republicans, having been made markedly less so.
Oh, well,
by virtue of not just how the public responded, but the fact that they improperly received no guidance from Republicans as to why this was a threat.
I said yesterday when I gave my speech here at the Restoration Weekend about my analysis of the election, I said the Republicans were dealt a royal straight flush and played it to an ace-high straight. That is what they did. You had an election where you had 12 Senate seats in play a month before the election.
Wow.
The Republicans could only win 6. Now, that was a big pickup where they were, but what was in play was much bigger. Mm. We have not had in modern times an election where the House switched, but not the Senate. But the House didn't just switch. It went from, we've had two wave elections for Democrats. We had a tsunami that was bigger than the two of them combined in the House, because that was more of a parliamentary election. There's still a lot of seats that were just barely lost. Mm-hmm. And would have gone. So, and my point is that this failure of narrative affects the Republicans across the board. And it was in the Senate races. But the piece of national security, what happens is, it is, people are more sensitive right now to concerns. I've been impressed with how strong the American public is about Iran. The threat of Iran, the threat of Sharia and Islam. You know, you and I have talked, Frank, about the fact that, you know, the mosque issue. I consider it one of the single
this
most...
This is the ground zero mosque issue. Right.
It is the reason that the political class on the left particularly is so upset about it, is it threatens the Democratic constituency. This is an American issue.
Right.
Let me tell you that when you have... And the thing that impresses me from a political point of view is that Hispanic voters... African-American voters, blue-collar voters, Jewish, these are all Democratic groups, Jewish voters. And most interestingly of all, by far, women feel so strongly about this issue. Women feel stronger than men do, which is counterintuitive in a way, because women tend to be an instinct for less confrontation, more let's find a way to get along. There is an American people have an intuitive understanding that something is wrong, but there is no message being put out there. There is no dialogue. We do not connect the dots from Fort Hood to the Times Square bomber to what's happening with Lockheed and his role. And
why is that, Pat Kendall? Why are we not?
Well, first of all,
why is there no narrative? What is it that the Republicans are missing? If you why are they not doing this?
Well, because I don't know. It's beyond me. It drives me crazy, because what I'm saying is, it's going to have to be politically. I keep saying there are two parties in America: the stupid party and the corrupt party. I happen to be a life member of the corrupt party, not because I'm for corruption, but I was. It's born to it. But the stupid party is really the proper term. I don't even have to tell listeners which is which. But
right. The
fact is, they don't get it because they can't see. How the issue, they don't understand how to move these. So let me give you one example that's really important, and I'm sure your audience is part of the few that know about it. The Molly Norris story of the cartoonist in Seattle, who's a liberal woman, who is in hiding because the government of the United States, put a fatwa to have her killed. The FBI told her to go into hiding. Our government will not protect an American citizen on American soil. They tell her to exercising free speech rights. She is in hiding, had to give up her job, her name, and went into her own witness protection program.
Let's remind her why she invoked this fatwa declared against her.
Because when we had, it's an amazing story. She was upset because of what happened on the Comedy Central show on South Park when they drew Muhammad and they ridicule everyone. They're set.
Right. And equal opportunity.
And they're really quite good at it. Their satire is brilliant. And the threat from the Muslim community, the Muslim extremists, and Comedy Central censored South Park because they were afraid. She was so outraged, Molly Norris, she suggested a Draw Muhammad Day, where everyone would draw their own cartoon of Muhammad, figuring they can't kill us all. They immediately went after her. And they issued a fatwa, and she tried to call it off. She was this was a terrified woman now.
Sure.
Living in terror of the United States, if the American people, Frank, knew about this issue, but I just want to point to one political race, Washington State. You have a close race with Patty Murray, who said after 9/11 about bin Laden, that we have to remember the wonderful things that he did, humanitarian things he did. That never came up in the race. Rossi was in a close race. The Republican never raised it. It was a Seattle resident. He was losing women overwhelmingly. It would have turned that race.
But he had no narrative.
No narrative. And the Republicans and consultants.
What should have been the National Republican.
Because of lack of imagination.
We have seen this translate, Cadell, into political losses.
Yes.
Now, offset by political gains, to be sure. But your message for the future is get this narrative
right. This issue is important.
To be clear to the American people about the threats we're facing and what we need to do about it. Pat Cadell, thank you so much for both your acumen and sharing it with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. This message could not be more important, and we appreciate you helping us get it around.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Next up, Peter Pham, an expert on Africa, about the imminent crisis in Sudan.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
This is Frank Gaffney. Are you tired of Congress rushing through far-reaching legislation without understanding the consequences or even reading the bill? It's given us a flawed health care plan, an ineffective stimulus package, runaway spending, and crippling debt. Now President Obama wants the Senate to treat our national security the same way by approving the new START treaty with Russia before anyone really understands its ominous implications. The treaty would leave us with fewer deployed nuclear weapons than the Russians and impede our missile defenses while doing nothing about growing nuclear threats from China, Iran, and North Korea. When it comes to keeping America safe, it can't be business as usual on Capitol Hill. Tell your senators that in an ever more dangerous world, we need a strong and reliable deterrent, not a bad treaty. Stop the START treaty now. Paid for by the Center for Security Policy, stopthestarttreaty.org.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Peter Pham. He is a tremendously thoughtful observer and analyst of matters particularly involving Africa, a part of the planet we don't know nearly enough about, I think, in this country, and Peter does. He's associated with the National Committee for Foreign Policy and the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, and we're always pleased to have him with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. Peter, thank you for joining us at a momentous time, particularly as it relates to developments in Sudan. So we're glad to have you back.
Well, thank you, Frank. Pleasure to be with you again.
Let's start with Sudan. There's a lot going on in Africa at the moment, of course, as there usually is, but Sudan is potentially one of the most problematic of the various crises or incipient crises that you cover so well. What is going on in Sudan at the moment, Peter, and what do you anticipate will play out in the next couple of months?
Well, currently in southern Sudan, they're going through the process of registration of voters for the referendum that is planned currently for to begin the 9th of January. And this is a referendum which the U.S.-brokered Comprehensive Peace Agreement of 2005 made provision for, whereby the people of southern Sudan long oppressed by the Arab Islamist regime in Khartoum. The Southerners are primarily black Africans, predominantly Christian and some traditional religion, African religions. They'll have a right to determine whether they want to stay as part of a united Sudan or form their own independent state.
And the widespread expectation, as I understand it, is that the Southern Sudanese, if allowed to vote, will overwhelmingly seek independence. Is that, in fact, your expectation?
Yes. In fact, I just returned, Frank, earlier in the month from 2 weeks in Sudan. I was both in the south and the north. And literally, I didn't meet a Southerner who had any intention of voting to stay as part of Sudan. And even in the north, many of the northern government officials, as well as analysts I spoke with, all acknowledge, privately at least in the north, that the Southerners would likely vote to secede.
Now, will those that you spoke with in the north or others involved actually allow that peaceful separation to proceed, starting with a vote, the registration for which is now underway, I gather. But will the vote, in fact, be held, in your estimation, and more to the point, should it come out the way you seem to think it will, and I think this is the general consensus, will the North tolerate that? And let me just add one other point. What is at stake for the North if the South does, in fact, secede?
Well, let's start with what's at stake, because what's at stake is the border has not been finally delineated between the prospective two entities, but a rough estimation, 80% of Sudan's oil reserves will be found south of that. So the north is facing the loss of 80% of the oil it used to rely on for its revenue, and the oil accounted for more than half of the northern government's budget and almost all of its foreign exchange. So they're going to face a serious financial contraction if they lose the South.
So does that mean that they will, in fact, accede to it happening, do you think?
Well, there are varying opinions. On one hand, there are the hardliners who say, never, 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 and I certainly met with some of those in the North. On the other hand, there are others who are somehow hoping that maybe they can salvage some sort of revenue-sharing deal with the South, because the South has no other way of bringing the oil to actual market except through a pipeline built by the Chinese, which flows more than 1,000 miles through the North to the Red Sea.
Wow. I want to come momentarily to one of the possible power brokers and how this plays out. But, Peter, before I do that, let me just ask you, you mentioned that the North is governed by Arabs who are Islamists, I guess, adhere to this supremacist program of Sharia, according to which there is simply no opportunity, no legitimacy for any territory that once was controlled by Muslims ceasing to be under their control. So there would be that at work, presumably, along the lines of the hardliners. But there's also this question about the role China plays. As you know so well, China has been deeply involved in Sudanese oil exploration and exploitation. What do you expect they will be up to in all of this?
Well, up to maybe about a year ago, one would have said that China was the protector of the regime in the north because it was reliant upon it for the oil production. It lent it political cover, softened UN sanctions against it, and more or less carried on somewhat not as a responsible stakeholder in the international system. However, in recent months, it's dawned upon the Chinese that any sort of a conflict, even if the North were to have the upper hand, could seriously disrupt oil production. And China relies on Sudanese oil for between 8 and 9% of its total imports. And in the tight world market that we're in for petroleum at the moment, China simply cannot easily replace the loss of what's virtually a tenth of its oil imports. And so they're now hedging their bets. In fact, when I was in Juba, a couple interesting vignettes.
Juba is in the southern area where the oil fields are to be found, as
yes,
I understand.
It's the capital of the prospective new state of South Sudan. And right next to the foreign ministry there, the Chinese are building what's the largest embassy being built. The U.S. has a consulate there. Other countries are building diplomatic missions. Everyone is expecting a new country to emerge. And the Chinese are building right next to the foreign ministry the largest diplomatic compound in this town. They're also building a new luxury hotel called the Beijing Juba. It's going to be the first high-rise building in Juba. So they're there
come what may, needless to say. Let me just reintroduce you. We're talking with Dr. Peter Pham. He is not only a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracy and director of the Africa Project at the National Committee on American Foreign Policy, but he is also, very importantly, the director of the Nelson Institute for International and Public Affairs at James Madison University, where he also teaches. You have written an important new book on the subject, U.S. Strategy in Africa, AFRICOM, Terrorism and Security Challenges. And just in closing, Peter Pham, your bookmaking at this point on whether we will see, much as we're seeing an uptick, I gather, in violence once again in the long-suffering area of Darfur at the hands of the North, will you tell me, make a prediction, is there going to be more violence vis-a-vis the South, or do you think they'll manage to affect this without it?
I think we're going to muddle through at least the referendum, possibly a little longer. But I think once the full magnitude of their losses dawns upon the regime in Khartoum, there's going to be recriminations within the regime, and even those who might be willing to accept, however grudgingly, a peaceful resolution, they might themselves be undermined by hardliners. You know, I know of no case in recent history where a country has lost a quarter to a third of national territory, 80% of its primary natural resource, and the regime survived intact. So I think in its own struggles, you're going to find lashing out on the part of the regime in Khartoum, and unfortunately, that will mean the possibility heightened of renewed conflict.
Yeah. Well, we will be following it very closely with you, Dr. Peter Pham. Thank you so much for joining us today here at Secure Freedom Radio and for the great work you're doing covering a very important beat that we all need to be paying a lot more attention to. We'll be talking with you again very soon. That's it for today's installment and indeed for this week. I hope you will join us again next week, same time, same station, for what you need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.